The right man with the right voice at the right time.
Right on.
Right on.
Right on time.
James T. Harris is on 104.1 The Truth. Right talk for Tucson.
Good afternoon, Tucson. I am the beautiful man. Standing right across from me is my sexy sidekick, Ross. Take your telephone call to 751-1041. Stacy in a tutu on a high wire. Yes, my friends, this is your daily dose of madness.
This is madness.
A little slice of life known as the conservative circus. Heard exclusively on 104.1 The Truth, right talk for Tucson. As you know, we have been doing our best to keep you up to speed on what is happening with the A-10 story. Earlier this week, we talked about Senator Ayotte, who is holding up an appointment for Secretary of the Air Force because she found out what's going on, the shenanigans going on behind the scenes with the Air Force and the divestment of the A-10. We first started this story out by, or actually broke the story, but talking to Senator Jeff Flake. And since then, it has morphed into something bigger than what we ever thought. And it's not about the city of Tucson, one of the homes of the A-10. The more we dug into the story, we found out that this is really about the job that the A-10 does and the people who really appreciated it the most are the people who have been in trouble overseas fighting for our country. When they had the opportunity to call in the A-10 and were saved by that. We have another story for you today. And it comes from Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells, and he is joining me today. Good afternoon, Mr. Wells. Or should I say Sergeant Wells?
I'm right here, sir.
Very good, very good. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. You are a Master Gunnery Sergeant for the Marine Corps?
That's correct.
And I know that you can't go into a lot of details about the where and when and why, but I do know that you have a compelling story to tell about how you were in serious trouble. I've heard it described as sort of like a Black Hawk Down or like the movie Saving Private Ryan. And I was wondering if you could share the details as much as you can of that story with my audience.
Yeah, I'd be happy to tell the story. It was I don't know if it can compare it to those other two stories, but it was a pretty serious situation.
Can you tell us where it took place?
It happened late 2008 in northwest Afghanistan.
Northwest Afghanistan, and I assume you were part of a convoy or doing some type of work there.
I was at the time a team chief for a small team. We were working with an Afghan National Army in a very, very remote area, remote enough that the only type of resupply we were able to get was parachuted into us. So food, ammunition, fuel, everything had to be airdropped. So we were pretty much out on our own.
So you were off of the main roads and off of a supply line doing very important work to where you were actually depending upon, you said airdrops for food and for vitals.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
So what happened?
Well, we had been in numerous engagements the previous month, and we had heard that the Taliban had drawn a red line and had challenged us not to cross this line, and that's just not in our nature. So we load up a patrol, separated two sections, and moved from the fire base down to separate roads, split the team into separate sections, joined with our Afghan National Army forces, and I was with Alpha section. Bravo section was on the moving up the parallel road, and we would move from compound to compound, and we would do what we call a knock and talk. We'd just come up to the locals, try to get the atmospherics, figure out what was going on, see what kind of intel we could gather, and kind of push beyond the line that had been lined out by the Taliban. And we had successfully made it to the to five series of compounds, and we were on the verge of actually calling the mission for the day, and we had completed what we had set out to do. And out of nowhere, we started taking small arms fire. There was a RPG that was fired, impacted between me and a Afghan national soldier, knocked him to the ground. I rushed forward to make sure he was okay, to pick him up and move him back. And at that point, it just completely exploded. We started reaching fire from three different directions. We were pretty exposed in the road that we're on, so we decided that we needed to find a better area to assess the situation. We had a pretty good idea where we were receiving the bulk of the fire from, so we rushed towards the compound that we knew the enemy was firing from, cleared that compound, but as that happened, the Afghan National Army soldiers that were moving with us ended up being cut off. We ended up securing the compound. At that point, we did a quick assessment. We ended up having six U.S. had one local interpreter that was with us, and then a sole Afghan National Army soldier that was in the compound with us. Started taking a pretty significant fire, so we set up a defensive position, called to the Bravo section to report our position. We sent up pin flares, sent smoke to let them know where we were so they could confirm our position, and the plan was they were going to move over and help us reinforce that position, and then we were going to continue the attack. As they moved towards us, they started receiving pretty heavy fire, and they weren't able to push across the open field, and it left us pretty isolated out there. The Taliban started moving in pretty heavy. We moved up to moved a couple guys up to the roof, and they could see Taliban fighters moving from the river that was parallel from our position, and also from the south. And we knew that they had the potential of manning up to 200 reinforcements, and we could see that they were moving pretty quick.
So you were isolated and cut off.
We were completely cut off. There was the six U.S., the one local interpreter, and then the one Afghan soldier. And we held that compound by ourselves for a while. Slowly but surely, we engaged numerous Taliban as they were moving up, killed a number of them, but quickly overwhelmed. The captain that was in my section, he called out, said that he physically saw Taliban fighters had actually breached the compound in the courtyard. Saw four or five of them moving around the building. The interpreter was able to tell us what the Taliban commander was saying, and he was directing them to try to breach the building that we were holding. They continued to move in. At one point, we actually had a Taliban on the outside of the room that we were in, and one of them managed to stick his weapon through the window, and fire burst. Hit my captain in the arm, and we returned fire. It was so close that we ended up taking a grenade, throwing it out the window to push them away. And my quorum started putting a tourniquet on the captain. As he was doing that, another burst of machine gun fire came through the window and actually hit the corpsman in the helmet and knocked him to the ground. Luckily, it grazed his helmet, didn't completely penetrate it, but it really rung his bell.
You know, you're describing this, and I'm just sitting here getting chills because, you know, this is the stuff that you would see in a movie, but I have to imagine that the terror, I mean, you're trained, of course, and you're trained for this, but you're watching as the enemy is closing in on you, and they're close enough to stick the gun through the window, and you guys are getting hit. I can't imagine. I should say, I imagine at this point training kicks in, but fear still has to be like caught in your throat.
I'd be lying to say I wasn't scared. I think we all were. I think we realized how serious it was. We called that over the radio immediately. Told them that, you know, we needed to cut off the compound. Couldn't let any more of these guys come in. We had crew served weapons on the vehicles, and over the 50 cal and the automatic grenade launcher in as close to the compound as possible to keep anyone else from getting into that compound. We also had an overwatch position with a sniper up there, and you know we cleared him to fire on anybody outside the building. You know, he confirmed that he saw a lot of movement on the outside. And we gave him the all clear to engage. Told him that we had no friendlies outside. Anybody outside was a bad guy. The captain managed to get a tourniquet on him, stop the bleeding, and had one of my sergeants from the other side start calling out, saying that we had three or four guys pushed up against the wall, or Taliban pushed up against the wall over on his side. They fired a couple RPGs, hit the wall that he was up against. It completely collapsed his wall, forced him into the room that we were in, and slowly pushed everybody back into that single room. There was a point where I was kneeling on the radio calling our joint tactical air controller, requesting to get a gun run ran parallel where we knew the Taliban was coming up from the river, and see if that could push them back. And he started working that air mission for us. Initially, he told us there was F-15 on station, but it had to check off because of it was running low on fuel. And within about 5 minutes, he reported that we had two A-10s that had checked in on station.
So let me stop you here. Let me set this up. You guys you're all pretty much forced into one room in the compound.
We are all in one room in the compound.
How many of you were there?
There was six U.S. There was one interpreter, a local interpreter, and then there was one Afghan soldier that was stuck there with us.
And you were facing how many Taliban, estimate?
Well, we estimated that there was about 50 Taliban that were moving towards us, and at this point we had 12 to 15 Taliban that were inside the courtyard of the compound.
So you were heavily outnumbered. You were pushed, basically forced back into one room, and the call is in. I'm going to stop you right there, Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells, and we're going to pick this up on the other side. My friends, you are listening to a real story of our troops who were working, fighting on behalf of our country in fighting against the Taliban. And we're going to pick up where Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Rails left off here. As the call has been put in, F-15s are standing down, A-10s are ready to intervene. You're listening to 104.1 The Truth, Right Talk for Tucson. You're listening to 104.1 The Truth, Right Talk for Tucson. We are on the line right now with Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells, and he is telling us a story, a harrowing story, about a situation that he found himself in with his unit in a firefight with the Taliban. And he's told us how they were under attack. Now, they wound up in a compound, and now everyone is in one room as the Taliban is closing in on them. They made a telephone call or a telephone call. They were called into the base or two F-15s, but they weren't ready to go. And he was just telling us how they had two A-10s that were ready to go. Mr. Gunny, welcome back to 104.1 The Truth.
Thanks, sir.
Now, when you made this call you made the call into Air Command?
Well, we had a joint tactical controller up in an overwatch position.
And you made this call in, and I would imagine that the situation obviously is desperate. What was the response?
We were excited to hear that we had air on station. Came up with a quick plan. Decided we were going to throw a bunch of grenades out the opening of the building we were in, and then just come out guns blazing. We made one attempt to do that, threw out grenades, had a Taliban fighter step into the corridor, fired a burst, hit my captain again in the same arm. At this point, we realized that it was now or never. Got everybody loaded up again, threw a bunch of grenades out, came out shooting. The number one man immediately encountered two Taliban fighters and cut them down. I had a Taliban fighter on my left that I was forced to shoot within about 8 feet. We continued around the building, came across two more fighters, engaged them, and then we rushed about 30 meters towards a wall that we thought would provide us cover. And while we were doing that, there was a couple of Taliban that we didn't see that opened fire, ended up hitting my corpsman. He absorbed a burst of machine gun fire. Three rounds hit his rifle, picked him up off the ground, landed on his back. Thought he was dead. I turned briefly to look at him. I saw that he reached up, drew his pistol that was on a holster on his body armor in the front, and while he was laying on his back, started firing and kind of pushing himself back towards the building. Meanwhile, the JTAC told us that the A-10s were getting ready to come in for a gun run. We knew we had to get to the wall that we thought would provide us cover. We managed to get over there, had to engage a couple guys as we made it, and we're absolutely shocked that we all made it around the wall. And I'll never forget looking up and seeing the first A-10 coming in. I mean, we looked back, we had killed eight Taliban exiting the building, and we knew there was probably 30 some left that were moving towards us. And I remember seeing the flash from the bird coming in, and I saw the rounds hit. From my vantage point, it looked like they were about 50 meters away, and it was the most terrifying yet beautiful sound I think I've ever heard. And talking to the rest of my team later, they all concur. It was really made a difference.
From 50 meters away. 50 meters away is all it was.
Yeah, it was close. It was enough that I know it made the guys think twice about following us. We were forced with our wounded, and by this time, the firefight had lasted 3 hours, so we were pretty dehydrated. A lot of smoke inhalation. The compound we were in took about 25 direct hits from RPGs, along with the concussions, not only from the RPGs but the grenades that we were throwing out the windows. So we were all pretty messed up. we were moving about half speed of what we would have liked, trying to egress out of there. And we were forced to move about 800 meters during that movement. You know, as we went, you know, the A-10s kind of circled around and gun run after gun run. We couldn't run down the road, so we had to move down fields, and we would come across 4-foot walls. And
let me hold you right there, Master Gunny. What we're going to do is we're going to take another quick break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to let you finish the story. We're talking to Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells. You're listening to 104.1 The Truth, Right Talk for Tucson. Minutes after the hour, you're listening to 104.1 The Truth, Right Talk for Tucson. We are on the line with Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells, who just told us a very compelling story about he and his team were caught in a crossfire with a firefight with the Taliban. He explained how they were forced into a compound, and then in order for them to save their lives, they all had to get out to a wall. People or team members are injured. They called in A-10s. A-10s came down and laid down a line of fire 50 meters from where they were. He said that was the most horrifying and beautiful thing that he had ever heard. And then he said that the A-10s circled them as they were trying to move to safety. Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells, welcome back to the show. That's kind of the fact that they could fire so close to you and take out the enemy and then keep their eyes on you and escort you to safety is pretty extraordinary for this type of warplane and the pilots that fly them.
I would agree. I wouldn't be telling this story right now if they weren't there.
How did you guys finally make your way out?
We we were moving slow, but we turned on our infrared strobes, and our immediately the JTAC told us that the A-10 pilots could see us from the strobes. It was dark by this time, and they had visual, which made us feel even more confident. And the two A-10s just circled around as we slowly moved our wounded 800 meters back. We finally linked up with a vehicle that was already loaded, put our most extreme wounded inside the vehicle, had a couple guys had to jump on top of the hood. I jumped on the tailgate, and we drove back to the fire base. We made it back to the fire base, but they stayed on station while the our Bravo section was starting their egress. They stayed in place trying to support until they knew that we were loaded up on vehicles. Once we got back to the fire base, dealing with the injuries, ended up having to medevac the captain out. He had lost a lot of blood. Had another Marine that was shot in the leg, dealt with that. Had a Navy corpsman that had shrapnel from when he took that burst of machine gun fire.
Mm-hmm.
His rifle exploded, and the sustained shrapnel from the rifle. And then we had a number of guys that were pretty pretty shooken up from the concussions. Guys that were pretty bad smoke inhalation, coughing up blood, things like that from being stuck in that compound.
But you all made it out.
All made it out, and the captain is actually still on active duty.
Wow. Master Gunnery, I talked to some person who was in the same situation you were a couple of weeks ago, and he had the opportunity to actually talk to the pilot who ended up saving his team. Did you have any such luck? And I would imagine after something like this, it's fair to call, say it's an extremely close call, that you would want to try to contact and thank in person the pilots who came to your rescue.
Matter of fact, when we were in Afghanistan, we heard the pilots were in Bagram, and we rushed out there. As soon as I got to Bagram, I tried to seek him out to talk to him personally. They unfortunately had rotated back already. When I was back stateside, I had a couple of Air Force personnel that I knew that I used to help track down both pilots. I was successful. One was actually in a Moody Air Force Base, and the other one was in he was an instructor right down in your neck of the woods. Managed to communicate with them both on telephone and email. Told them, you know, really just how much we appreciated it. Told them that we couldn't really describe in words what they did that day, you know, what it meant for us. We sent them plaques personalized from the team, just, you know, a small token of our appreciation, and told them that as far as we're concerned, they're both part of our family and will always be for the rest of our lives. And it's a date that, you know, myself and the rest of my team, we celebrate that date every year. And on that anniversary, we reach out to the pilots because we consider them to be as big as, you know, as big a part of that day as us. You know, we fought our way out of the compound, but there's no way we would made it past that wall.
Sergeant Wells, I want to thank you, first of all, for your service to this country. And I want to thank you for sharing the story. As you know, we are in a new battle here trying to save the very plane and the pilot's jobs that saved your life. And I think that your story goes a long way in explaining to people just how vital it is, this wing is, to the mission of protecting troops on the ground.
Well, you know, I appreciate getting a chance to tell the story. I want to be able to tell the story if it wasn't for the those two pilots that day, and I will always be in their debt for the rest of my life.
Master Gunnery Sergeant Richard Wells, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And there it is, my friends. You know, they're talking about how they had the equipment to be able to see what was going on at night. Actually, when I went through the A-10 training thing at Davis Mountain, I had an opportunity to see those things in action. It's freaky. When you put that on, it picks up the faintest of light. It illuminates it. And the pilot told me that when you're flying at night, he's like, you have to get used to it quickly because you can see every star in the sky. It's like overwhelming. But these pilots are trained to use this to protect our soldiers' lives. And that was a compelling story of how the A-10, the very A-10 that the Air Force has slated to end, is when you think about it, is there another plane in the Air Force that can provide that kind of cover? In that type of situation, many argue no. You're listening to 104.1 The Truth, Right Talk for Tucson.